You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things KISS. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, I'm Paul Stevenson, and this is episode 81 of Vintage Rock Pod, the ultimate classic rock podcast, with a new episode released every single day. You get these big-name extended interview shows every Monday, and short 4 or 5 minute daily episodes are released Tuesday through Sunday on a show that I call This Day Rocks. And I thank you, as always, for hitting play. It's been a busy week since episode 80, featuring a great chat with Sex Pistols' Glenn Matlock. A few more interviews in the can for coming episodes, the daily This Day Rock shows, and of course, the full album February. It's in full swing. If you've missed this, then basically every day this month I'm going to listen to an album in full in the order it was intended, but not the classic albums. I'm talking about long-lost, forgotten records, ones that should have got more attention. I asked you to nominate the albums, and you duly delivered. And this week started with Pink Floyd's David Gilmour's solo record, his first one, his debut one. Things were notched right up on the second with Big Country's The Buffalo Skinners record. This is one from the 90s I'd never heard before, and it's bloody brilliant, to be honest with you. If you like full-on hard rock, then you have to give this a listen. On the third, it was a bit of a more mellow affair, all about Eve's self-titled debut release, which contains the beautiful Martha's Harbour song. I love that one. And as I record this, on the fourth, today's record is Marauder by Blackfoot, which I can't wait to dive into. Now, I post all of these on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and on YouTube, and you can see that on the subscriptions tab on YouTube, if you just open your app. And it's great to see so many people listening along, joining in, and commenting on social media with their thoughts. I'll list a few. Jerry Bozzi, Pink Floyd Collectors, The Music Box on YouTube, Joe Kay, Adam Hamilton, Mark Hay, Timothy Lord, John Clark, Ned Itcham, Richard Metcalf, Gordon Skinner, Rob Stainton, Tracy Hazelton, Eric Campbell, Mark Schultz, and Doris Ruby. Huge thanks for getting involved, everybody. You know I love hearing from everyone who gets in touch, so please do join in if you can. You don't have to listen to every single one, but definitely dive into some of them, and you'll hopefully discover some great albums that might have passed you by. Right, on to today's show then, and it's another Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, 2 in 2 weeks for you. Now, this guy's career spans more than 50 years, and his band are back with a new album, and, to be honest, they're constantly touring as well. They hit up over 60 dates in the US last year, and are back there in 2023, and they've got a tour of Europe and the UK this year too. He was part of the British Invasion, but then went on to form another band in the 70s, and had hits with them as well. He's later worked with the likes of Phil Collins and Gary Moore, The Who, and interestingly, Andrew Lloyd Webber. I am, of course, talking about Rod Argent from The Zombies and Argent. Now, if you're a fan of The Zombies, who had some huge hits with the likes of Time of the Season and She's Not There, then check out my interviews with Zombies lead singer Colin Blunstone. I've interviewed him twice on Vintage Rock Pod, so definitely worth checking those out as well. Now, in this interview with Rod, we'll talk about the early days, those breakthrough hits for the Zombies. We'll speak about Argent and what Rick Wakeman had to say about one of their songs, and how Gene Simmons from KISS tried to claim he wrote a song that Argent originally performed. We talk about his time working with The Who and also hear about the new album that's coming our way as well. Now, The Zombies' new release is called Different Game and it's due for worldwide release on March 31st, 2023. There is a single out now, so you can listen to that. It's called Dropped, Reeling and Stupid, so definitely do check that out. Right, here you go. Please enjoy my chat with the lovely, fun and entertaining Rod Argent from The Zombies. Exciting news. You've got a new album coming out. We've got the first single, which is out there. You've seen it today. It's fantastic. So we're going to get to that. But obviously, we'll have a little chat about your career first, because it's been an exemplary career, fantastic career. And we'll start at the very beginning. She's Not There. I remember speaking to Colin, obviously, your good friend and lead singer with The Zombies. And he was saying that he was amazed that She's Not There was probably one of the first songs that you'd ever written. And you were, what, 16, 17 when you wrote that song, and 18, 19 when it went to number one in America. I mean, what was your memories of that song in those early days?
Well, my memories were that the first song I ever really remember writing, although in very recent years I realised I'd written one for Jim Rodford, who was the founder member of Argent with me and also in the Kinks for many years. He had a band called the Blue Tones. He was 4 years older than me. And he asked me to write a song for them. And unbelievably, when I was about 15, I did. And I'd completely forgotten that song. But many, many years later, I never realised this, he'd actually recorded it. His manager had paid for a session at Olympic Studios. And this was only a small semi-pro band. And there was this really nice version of it, although it was a very derivative song, I have to say, derivative of the first Beatles things that had just come out, you know, really. That's a part. The very first song I wrote was called "It's All Right with Me," and we did that as one of the songs on the Heartbeat competition, which was the contest that we won that led to our first Decca recording contract. and Dick Rowe knocked on the door and said, "I'd like to sign you for a single thing," which was wonderful. But then we were going to record "Summertime." I mean, I hadn't thought of writing anything, and neither of Chris White, actually. The guy that we got to produce this for the first session said, "You know, you could always write something yourselves," and that's all he said. And everybody forgot about it. And I went away and wrote "She's Not There." And with the naivety and ignorance of youth that you only have once, because you don't know any of the pitfalls that can happen, I thought, "Yeah, I can write a song, and it'll be a hit, and it'll." We'll record it and it'll sound great. Connie will sound great singing it. We'll bang some lovely harmonies on it. And unbelievably, it all happened. and I wasn't surprised. We were knocked out. But it became the first record after the Beatles to get to number one in the States with a self-written song. We actually even made the 9 o'clock news. I always remember phoning home, which was a big deal in those days, from America. And my mother said, "You've just been on the 9 o'clock news." And I thought, "Oh my God, what have I done?" You know. but she said, no, you're okay. It's and she said that they related the story to that. And that was number one in Cashbox and number two, I think, in Billboard. But there you go. So it was a dream start. I mean, I was 18 when I wrote it and the record came out. I was 19 when it reached number one in the States, and so was Colin. We're just 10 days apart in terms of birthdays. So it was an absolute dream. But very soon reality came in when things weren't so successful. I mean, although our second record in the States was a top five record as well, that was Tell Her No, which I think we had absolutely the wrong record out over here. But we were badly managed in many ways and in the UK. But anyway, that's another story entirely.
Indeed. Not talking about management, but the producers that you worked with. I heard a story you said once where you weren't even allowed in the mix of it. You weren't allowed to see what was going on or hear what was going on. So at times you were recording something you thought sounded fantastic and you'd come back and it'd sound completely different.
Absolutely. We would often do demos ourselves and they were rough, but they had all the essentials of balance and often some very rich harmonies, and all those rich harmonies got thrown away on the final production. We sang them, but instead of being equal, they were sort of certain lines were pushed well into the background, and it only sounded like there was some scrappy stuff going on. And it was driving us crazy. And that's why we recorded Odyssey and Oracle, actually, because Chris and I, it was in the air. I mean, Colin and I never quite agree on this, but it was in the air that we were that we might split up, because we were based so much in the UK and we were handled so badly in the UK that we'd only ever had one hit single over here. Although around the world, we had many more hits. But it was just, you know, we thought, we can't, you know, we've made so many demos that we like that we have to try and produce an album ourselves. Didn't know if we could do it, but we thought at least we'd get our own ideas down of how the songs should sound. And it might not work, but we loved the experience. We had an absolute ball. And we loved the album when it was finished. But as we were completely based in the UK, the only guy that went out on a limb was Kenny Everett, actually. Yes. And I remember doing a couple of interviews with him, and he just loved it. But nobody else sort of mentioned it, and it just got lost. And we thought, okay, well, that's it. But at least we made something that we like.
Indeed. I was going to say quickly, though, you mentioned Kenny Everett. There's a famous interview with yourselves with Kenny, and you talk about splitting up, and he says, but the album's not even out yet. Why are you splitting up before the album's even released?
Cat Stevens was on that program. I remember that well, that particular interview. And Kenny played A Rose for Emily, which is a very sort of wistful ballad on the album. And Cat Stevens said, God, I love that song, you know. And we thought, oh, that's lovely, you know, it's really, really nice. But by that time, our guitarist was just about to get married. And he said, I've got no money, you know, because, again, I know I keep coming back to this, but we were stiffed out of, I mean, we'd had a couple of huge hit records in the States, headline tours, and we never made a penny out of live work. I mean, Chris and I were lucky because we actually had honest publishers, and that was really rare in those days. So everything that happened around the world was getting paid to us in terms of the writing fees. So we were fine. Chris and I were fine. But the rest of the guys, you know, just didn't have any money. And that was one of the main reasons why we split up. It wasn't a falling out or anything like that.
And I remember, again, speaking to Colin talking about the album at the time. It was, it got no attention, really, didn't it? It didn't really attract an awful lot at the time. But you did have a guy in the United States, a DJ over there, a lone DJ. I think it was in Idaho or something like that, who loved the song. And he always wanted to play Time of the Season. And he kind of got the traction for that song for you, didn't he?
He really did. It was in Boise, Idaho. And he's only just passed away, actually, in the last couple of years, I think, or two or three years. But he was responsible for it because in the way that things could happen in those days, things could happen very slowly. And because he was the only guy playing it, it started to be a big hit in Boise. and then like somebody throwing a stone into a pond, the ripples started to go outwards and it suddenly caught fire and zoomed up the charts. And that was a real knockout. But I'd already started to form Argent by that time, and Chris and I were joint producers of Argent and joint writers, so we didn't want to just throw all that away. We never wanted to look back, actually. I mean, that's been something over all our career, the whole of our careers, actually. We've always done things for real. We've always done things because we wanted to write new stuff and get excited by it, and that's the thing that keeps you. In whatever way we are sort of energetic and vital, that's what keeps you like that, you know, to keep those same goals in mind. And I always love writing songs. And then I'll always get Colin round, first of all, and it'll be Colin and me that go through the songs and work it out and, you know, check that I've got exactly the right key for him. But I know his voice so well. and he sings everything in the original keys, and I do too. You know, so that's lovely. And I know you've heard the new single, and you know, you can tell that he's still singing way up there and with energy and conviction, you know. So it's really a lovely thing to still have.
Absolutely.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
So you mentioned there you were moving on to Argent. We'll just quickly move on to Argent. I mean, again, another big hit, Hold Your Head Up. And it was a kind of almost similar kind of story to Time of the Season, where you had a lone DJ who was loving the song and he gets to play it every week. And again, the ripple effect happened with that song as well, didn't it?
It really did. That was Alan Freeman. And the thing was, in those days, it became very unfashionable to have singles. And, you know, you're either an album band or you know, but you wouldn't mix that with singles generally, just for a short, you know, 2 or 3 years, it was like that. And I was so knocked out because we didn't plan it to be a single. It was supposed to be part of an album. And as always, we were late. And the tour had started and the album wasn't ready. So the record company said, well, we've got to put out an EP. And they put an EP out. And one side of the EP was the long version of Hold Your Head Up, which had a 3-minute organ solo or something like that in the middle of it. Which actually, I have to say, in the last few years, it completely knocked me out. One Christmas, I was at my brother-in-law's place, who is actually Paul McCartney's recording engineer. And suddenly on a Johnny Walker show, he had Rick Wakeman being interviewed, and he said, you've got to choose a long track that you love. And he said, well, I want you to play the long version of Hold Your Head Up. He said that, and he actually said, I can't believe he said this, but he actually said, that's the greatest organ solo on any record. And I thought, oh, wow, you know, it made my Christmas, I tell you.
I bet it did.
But the thing was, none of the radio stations would play it over here, except for Alan Freeman. He had a show on a Saturday, and every week he played it, and it stubbornly kept selling enough to keep it just outside the top 50, I think it was. It might have been the top 30, but just outside the top 50. And then we went to Holland for a tour, and while we were over there, the record company, very wisely in commercial terms, just chopped out the whole organ solo. And it became a 3-minute or 3:30 song or something like that. It immediately started bubbling under you know, whatever the next hurdle was, the 30 or the 20. And we got a Top of the Pops. We did Top of the Pops. And the next day we were going to a gig and there was this huge holdup. And I remember saying to Russ, is the new Bond film out? You know, this is such a delay here, you know, and then look, there's a queue round the block, you know, what's going on? And it was for us, you know, and it was away then, and it became a top 5 records, and that was lovely.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And just another song to pick up on as well. Obviously, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, a top 20 hit for you guys over here in the UK, big hit in 1973.
Yeah.
How did you feel then when you heard Kiss's version of it in the early 90s? I mean, what did you make of their version?
Well, when I first heard it, I thought it was as straight a copy as you can imagine, except without all the cascading harmonies at the end, because they didn't put any of that in. Many years later, I heard Gene Simmons on a children's show saying, here's a song I wrote. And he changed one couplet, the couplet that Russ had written about "Love Cliff Richard, but please don't tease." He said, "No one in America knows who that is, so I'm going to change the couplet." And Russ said, "Yeah, fine." But then he claimed that he'd written the song, which is a bit naughty.
My word indeed. Now, you've worked on many other projects as well, obviously, as well as Argent and Zombies. You've done music for TV shows. You've worked with the likes of Gary Moore and Phil Collins and people like that. But what I want to ask you about is The Who. Now, you played on one of their absolute classic songs, Who Are You? How did all that come about?
It came about because I'd just done an album as a session player for Roger Daltrey. And I think it was One of the Boys, but do you know what? I can't remember if it's that one or the next one. But anyway, he said to Pete, "I think we should get Rod on the next album." And I mean, such a wonderful, talented band, absolutely marvellous. And I actually played on three tracks on the album, although I'm only credited on two. And my favourite personal contribution was on "Love Is Coming Down." That's me playing piano on that, but. I didn't get credit for that. I mean, but what actually happened, they had a month assigned for the album and I committed to that. But I'd already then committed to work with Andrew Lloyd Webber's project with his brother Julian Lloyd Webber on cello and Gary Moore and John Heisman and Barbara Thompson. And at the end of that month, I mean, the Who never spent a long time on any of the tracks recording. When they actually got into the studio, I remember "Who Are You," at least my part in it, and the whole backing track, etc. Maybe not the lead vocal, I don't know. Although Roger was singing, it happened in about 4 hours. I mean, that was the track. But they were going through a lot of political things at the time, and they were up having meetings all day long for quite a lot of the time. I'm not criticizing. I didn't mind being there. But at the end of the month, I said to Pete, "I'm sorry, I've got to finish now because I'm committed to do this album with Andrew Lloyd Webber." He said, "Well, which album would you rather do?" I said, it's not any sort of question of that. I've committed to do it, you know, so I'm not going to just pull out and not do it. And so I was only on those three tracks. And in the end, I only got credited for two. But as I said, I was on three.
Oh. And what do you remember about working with The Who? I mean, what were the guys like in the studio to work with when you actually got them in the studio?
They were absolutely lovely. I'm very talented, really committed. I remember Keith Moon was always the person who was there first in the day on time.
All right.
He would always get there. Whatever the start time was, maybe it was 11 o'clock. I mean, it was in South London at Ramport. I had to come all the way from St. Albans and the traffic was pretty bad. So I think it was 11 o'clock. And I'd get there and then Keith would be there and he'd be really quiet and sober. And on about the third day, he said to me, "Oh, there's nobody here yet." He said, "Do you fancy popping around down the road, you know, around the corner for a drink?" And he said, and I said, "Yeah, okay." And so I started to make off. And he said, "I've just got to avoid my minders." He said, "I can't stand the fact that they're coming with me everywhere." And anyway, we walked into this really rough pub. And as we walked by this huge guy, you know, playing pool, he was just about to take a shot. And Keith nudged his arm and went, "Oh, sorry, mate." And the guy, you know, looked at him. And I thought, "There's going to be trouble here very soon." So I said, "Oh, Keith, I just remembered I've got to make a phone call." And I went back. And then he turned up a couple of hours later, you know, really three sheets to the wind. And he was up on his drum rostrum because he used to record on a drum rostrum, a really high drum rostrum in the studio. And as I walked into the studio, there was a hail of drumsticks being thrown at me. I thought, "What's happened?" But he was a lovely guy, though, really lovely, and everybody was. It was very enjoyable, but a bit of a fractured experience, you know.
Yes, yeah, I can imagine. Honestly, I could sit and listen to stories like these all day, Rod, but the reason you're here is to talk about the brand new album you've got out with The Zombies. Different game. It's a interesting looking album cover, the artwork to it and everything like that. The van being towed away in the desert. Give us a quick story behind that album cover first.
Well, that was a photo that I took because It just shows you what life on the road is really like sometimes.
Yeah.
Because we were traveling across the Arizona desert. We were about 15 miles outside Phoenix, and the temperature was probably about 107, 108. It might even have been more. Suddenly, the air conditioning broke down, and we traveled actually 2 hours before that it had broken down, and they said, well, we'll be in wherever it was we were going in about 3 hours. So, you know, we've got no choice really. We're going to have to. So we stopped at one of the last stops that we could, bought a load of ice because there was no other way of doing it. And we carried on, and everyone started to really feel in distress. And then the engine caught fire, and it was something to do with an air conditioning fault or, you know, whatever. And that then eventually caused the engine to catch fire. So we had to stop by the side of the road, try and get help, which was 2 hours away. We managed to get someone to come out who agreed to come out with a different van and tow that one away. I took a picture, which I thought was really surreal because the light in the desert and the mountains that you could see in the background, and the fact, the reality of what can happen when you're touring. And as the light was fading, the sort of red glow from the van and it being put onto the towing machine. And then at the same time, the way people were looking at the left and the sort of atmosphere of the photo looked to me a bit like E.T., you know, when people were waiting for the thing. And I thought, this is a stunning picture, you know, and I took it. And it became the album cover. And the thing is, I'd already, the words to Different Game are not based on that, but it fitted absolutely beautifully, because it is a different game to what people sometimes imagine, you know, the actual reality of touring and the tedium that's involved getting from one place to another, particularly in America. This is what some people don't realize. You know, they think it's just going on stage for a couple of hours and that's all you do, but it's everything that surrounds it, and they're hard days. I'm not complaining. I mean, the actual playing on stage is fantastic and rejuvenating, and that's wonderful. All the bits that surround it are a different game to what people sometimes imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I spoke to Fito Della Para recently from Canned Heat, and he was saying that they don't charge to play music on stage. They charge for all the inconvenience around it, the traveling, the being away from family, that sort of thing. That's the way he looks at it anyway. Quite interesting. Anyway, Different Game, it's going to be released at the end of March. March 31st, it's coming out. As we said, the first single's out now. You can see the video on YouTube. It's got a really nice video to it with the lyrics and everything up on the screen. That's called Dropped, Reeling and Stupid. So let's start with that song. You and Colin, I believe, trade vocals on this one as well, don't you? It's a real nice contrast. Tell us about that.
We do. And it's something we used to do in the old days. And it just felt natural to do it this time. And then join in unison in places. And then there is some harmony as well, with Colin and me singing in harmony. And it's something I'd like to do more of, actually, because we used to do that in the old days. And I always liked that. I like the spark of, you know, one against the other. We had a song on one of the early albums of this incarnation, and it was called South Side of the Street, I think, and where we did that. On that, and I enjoyed that as well. So it just felt natural, really. And it's one of the, I mean, on the album, we've tried to, the one thing I dislike sometimes is when, if you like, in inverted commas, vintage groups make new albums, they're sometimes toned down. They sometimes feel a bit less energetic or committed than some of the earlier albums. So I really did not want that. And so I thought it was really important that we had on the album at least three or four real rockers, or things that have lots of energy and drive, you know, and commitment. And then you can do the beautiful ballads, and it's a really nice contrast then. And you put just as much energy into those ballads in a different way, in the sort of intensity and concentration. But the contrast is really nice then. And Drop Reeling, we wanted to record the album very much in as live a way as possible. So I've got this great little studio. It's only small, but it was actually designed unbelievably by John Flynn, who did the Abbey Road control rooms. And the sound in there, and it's only just set up for me, which means that we can all work together in it. There's, I don't know if you can see in that room. That's the live room. That's where I've got the organ. That's where the drums are set up. And then I've got all my keyboards over here. But anyway, I've got lines laid into the house as well. So there are some, I did some string writing on the album as well for a couple of the ballads. And we recorded the strings in the house. So it's very much almost like we did Odyssey and Oracle, where we were in charge of how things sounded and how they came out, you know, and that was important. But we wanted to do it as live a way as possible. So during the pandemic, we had to stop. But rather than just make the album in the way we would then have had to, which was do it in people's different studios and sending off the tracks, put your part on, we wanted that thing where musicians bounce off each other as they're playing, and that we react to Colin as he's singing. Colin would always do a guide vocal, and some of the guide vocals, certainly on Drop Reeling, the guide vocal turned out to be the lead vocal on that. And some of the solos, we initially thought we'd revisit, but we didn't on most of them. They became, so it was as close to being on stage and capturing. In the old days, that was the only way you could do things. In the old days, it was all about capturing that thing that was just from the tape where the sum is sort of greater than the parts, if you like, because something happens and there's a little bit of magic that just happens when everything happens at once and people get it all right. And that's when it feels nicest to play, actually. And we wanted to go back to that, and largely on the album we did.
Absolutely fantastic. And as we said, Different Game, it's out on March the 31st, so everyone can look forward to getting their hands on that. And I'm sure there's loads of different ways nowadays to get hold of it. It's not just streaming, but you can actually get the physical copies and LPs and things like that. So if people want to pre-order, is that available to do so now?
Yes, apparently it is. You'd have to look on one of our websites or Facebook pages or something, because it's all handled by our American management. But absolutely, we can, you know, people can pre-order.
Fantastic.
It would be wonderful, because the last album we did, actually charted in the Billboard Top 100 album sales, which was a knockout. It was only there for a couple of weeks, but nevertheless, it was there, you know, and that was great. And I'm hoping for that this time as well, if we possibly can. I do think personally, I know it's our new album and everything, but I personally think it's the best album we've done since Odyssey and Oracle. I really hope you agree when you hear it. But also, the other thing is, you're talking about the different formats. We took a great deal of trouble to get the people we wanted to master it. We chose Randy Merrill in Sterling Sound in New York, because I particularly like the mastered sound on the McCartney album Egypt Station, and he did that. But also the vinyl master, someone from the same studio, because what they do, I don't know if you know technically, but they take the original master, but for vinyl you have to bring different things into play because of the mechanical way of reproducing. You can't have quite as much bass, or you have to look at it in a slightly different way, you know, that technical things. I was knocked out with the vinyl pressing, absolutely knocked out. We just okayed it before it started to go into manufacture. So I'm really, really pleased on all counts.
Thank you so much for all your time you've given us today, Rod. I could chat with you for hours and hours still, but best of luck with the new album when it comes out the end of March, and hopefully see you on the road.
Thank you so much.
And a huge thank you to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Rod Argent for joining me. Please do pre-order the new record and look for tickets for the live shows as well. I think the announcement in this past week from Ozzy Osbourne has really struck home with me about him not being able to tour again. And you kind of add that up with the sad loss of the likes of Jeff Beck and David Crosby recently. You kind of realise that we're losing legends that made rock and roll. A big shout out to Joe Kay from Play That Rock and Roll podcast for posting a quote from author Stephen Hayden, who said that we are now in the twilight of the gods. When you think about these incredible superheroes of ours, some of them kind of feel like they've been around forever, don't they? They're sadly kind of reaching a point that we're all dreading. So please don't hold off. I mean, support these guys while you can. Buy their records. Go to the shows. You never know, it might be the last chance you get to see them. Sorry for getting a bit morbid there, but it is kind of true, isn't it? Right, on to brighter things then. It's the time of the show where we look at the top fives, and because I've already done my top five songs from The Zombies, and you'll have to check out episode 4 to hear that top five, this week I'm going to do my favourite five songs from the band Argent. Now, last week, thanks to my interview with Glenn Matlock, I did my favourite five songs from the Sex Pistols. Obviously, there's not a huge amount of material to work with, but my favourite of theirs is Pretty Vacant. So thanks to you people who contributed comments on this, including Michelle Verhoes, who went with the classic God Save the Queen, of course, and Patrick O'Brien, who said that the controversial song Bodies was his favourite. Right, let's see what you make of this choice this week then. My favourite five songs from the band, Argent. At five is a song that's better known for the Three Dog Night version, but it was written by Ross Ballard in Argent. This track was on the band's debut album from 1970. At number five is Liar. At number four is a track from their big album, All Together Now, from 1972. This track peaked at number 34 in the UK. And number four is Tragedy. And number three is a song from the band's fifth studio album, Nexus. It's another Ross Ballard composition and opens side two on the LP. And number three is Thunder and Lightning. Number two comes from the 1973 album In Deep. It's the main single and opening track. It went top 20 here in the UK, but was better known for the Kiss version in America. And number two is God Gave Rock and Roll to You. And at number one is the big song, the group's big hit, reached number five in the UK, the US, and in Canada in 1972. It's a rock classic, and it's been covered by a whole host of acts, from Uriah Heep to Mr. Big and Steppenwolf to Mother Love Bone, and they all do it justice. My favourite song of theirs, my number one song from Argent, is Hold Your Head Up. Hold your head up. So there you go, my top five songs from Argent. As always, I'd love to hear what you think. What's your favourite track of theirs? Message me on the social media platforms, or you can email me vintagerockpod@gmail.com. And of course, I'll give you a shout out on next week's big interview show. And remember to keep checking out the Vintage Rock Pod social media channels for the full album February stuff. See what records we're listening to each day. Join in, leave your comments. Everyone's welcome. It's a great way to bring music fans together and to try and unearth some lost classics and some forgotten gems. Check out Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on YouTube on the subscription or the community tab to see all those posts. And while I've got you a couple more things that don't cost a penny, I'd love you to do to help Vintage Rock Pod. One is to leave a review on the podcast app that you use. Apple Podcasts is clearly the most popular amongst you. You can hit the 5-star button on there. And if you're feeling very kind, leave a few words in the review as well. It really helps with the algorithms and things like that. It gets the podcast a bigger exposure. On Spotify, you can also leave 5 stars now and things like that. And there's other ones as well, like Podcast Addict and Good Pods and all that sort of stuff. Just always leave a 5-star rating. It makes a big difference. You can do it now while you've got your phone with you. Go on, do it. Another thing you can do, oh, is tell a friend. Word of mouth is the most effective way of growing podcasts. It's proven. So don't keep it to yourself. Tell everybody about this amazing podcast that you listen to. It's called Vintage Rock Pod. And thirdly, hit like on the posts on social media. Again, these pesky computer things. If you don't engage with a page, then you stop seeing their posts, whether you like it or not. A simple thumbs up on Facebook or on YouTube, a love heart on Twitter or whatever it is on Instagram, it makes a big difference. So there you go. Three ways to help Vintage Rock Pod, all free. Something you can do dead easily, so no excuses. Well, that's it for me and this week's big interview show. Thanks again for listening. Make sure you subscribe to Vintage Rock Pod on your podcast app so that you get all the episodes that come out every single day. So with that, I'll be back tomorrow with another This Day Rocks. So until then, take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.